Hello, and welcome to Life Matters, the program where we engage life issues with critical thinking and a biblical worldview. Life Matters is an educational outreach resource of Assure Women's Center in Omaha, Nebraska. We're honored to host a variety of guests within the pro-life movement, each bringing their own unique perspectives, experiences, and backgrounds. The views and opinions expressed by our guests do not necessarily reflect those of Life Matters, Assure Women's Center, or our affiliates. Our goal is to foster open, thoughtful dialogue around life-affirming issues and equip listeners to stand for life.
Welcome to Life Matters. I'm Toni Clark, Executive Director of Assure Women's Center in Omaha. Today, we're in a multi-week series where we are featuring national organizations engaged in pro-life work across the country. Through this series, we want to step back and take a look at the pro-life movement through a wider lens. While this program airs on Christian radio, the reality is that many of the conversations we have about life happen with people who don't share our faith. In these interviews, we'll be learning from national organizations that approach the life issue from different perspectives, helping us better understand how the case for life is being made in an increasingly secular culture. Today, I'm joined by Monica Snyder. She's the executive director of Secular Pro-Life. Several years ago, I heard Monica speak at a pro-life conference, and her session was incredibly informative. I believe her perspective is especially helpful for Christians who want to engage thoughtfully and effectively with non-Christians on life issues. Monica, welcome to Life Matters. So before we dive into issues, tell us a little bit about your background, your education, your journey into pro-life work, and how you came to be involved with Secular Pro-Life from its early days.
I came to be involved with Secular Pro-Life because of social media. I never really had talked about abortion much when I was younger. And then I joined Facebook in its very early days. Nobody really knew what social media was going to be like. And all of a sudden, you have this venue for talking with people who you're not personally connected to. There's no risk to your relationships. And I joined, back then Facebook had debate boards. And I joined a debate board about abortion because I was curious. And I very much am one of those personalities that someone's wrong on the internet and that needs to be corrected, especially back then, much worse even than now. I basically found myself arguing about abortion, I think literally every single day for like a year with a few dozen other someone is wrong on the internet types of people. And I understand that most people would think, oh my gosh, that sounds like such a colossal waste of time. But I did not feel that way. First of all, I'd never really talked about it. So it was really helping me see where my views were maybe less obvious than I thought or harder to explain than I thought. It helped me understand. This was very big for me at that age. It helped me understand why reasonable and good people could be pro-choice. And it wasn't just because they had a chance to articulate their points to me, although that was part of it. But the bigger thing was I became friends with them because we're all arguing with each other constantly, day in and day out forever. You're sort of frenemies, you know, you just kind of know them. And that makes it easier to hear what they're saying. Obviously, it didn't change my mind, but it really contextualized. Before that, I just couldn't comprehend how anybody could disagree with me on this. And now I have a better sense. So that was all very good. And it sort of awakened me to my desire to at least argue about this. And in that time, one of the other several dozen devoted internet warriors was a woman named Kelsey Hazard. And something like a year or 2 years after we had first started constantly arguing online, she contacted me and she said, hey, I really think that we need a place for pro-lifers who aren't religious. Do you want to help me make a group for that? So she knew I wasn't religious. And I said, sure, why not? At the time, I thought it would just be another Facebook page. And it was a Facebook page. And she just called it Secular Pro-Life. And for years, Kelsey was the engine that kept that project going. I helped her a lot and often, but I would flit in and out. I would help for a few months and then be over it and go do other things. But she was there. She made a website. She made a blog. She started inviting guest bloggers. And we were surprised constantly at how much it expanded. We had no plan. We weren't thinking, let's make a 501c3 organization and solicit some foundational donors. We had no idea what we were doing. It was completely ad hoc. But we found people coming to us of two types. First were Christians who were saying, oh, this is really interesting and cool, and I'm glad to be able to show that this is bigger than, you know, one particular viewpoint. And second, very dear to mine and Kelsey's heart, were secular people, atheists and agnostics and just non-religious people. And especially in the beginning, all of them would contact us and say, I thought I was literally the only one. Because and they were very lonely and they didn't know where to fit in. And so that was the origin. The saga of From There to Here is a different story, but I became very invested emotionally and just a lot of passion behind it. And I helped Kelsey from the beginning. So that was in 2009 that she founded the group.
Cool. So did you, I mean, when did you know you were pro-life?
I've always been pro-life.
Okay.
Yeah. I was raised Catholic.
Okay.
And my parents, it wasn't just we're Catholic and this is part of what Catholics think. They also kind of made a big deal about it as its own issue.
Yeah.
You know, so for example, my knowledge of Catholics, Catholics tend to have very strong views on a lot of social justice issues.
Right, right.
I couldn't tell you why, but my parents, for example, they didn't necessarily make as big of a deal out of something like the death penalty.
Right.
Or immigration. Like, they may have passingly talked about it, but the abortion issue separately and in addition to our faith, they talked about that. And in particular, when I was probably 8 or I'm not sure how old I was, somewhere between 7 and 9. I'm just guessing. My dad went to the local abortion clinic just to kind of see what's up, what's going on here. And he knew the sidewalk counselor. There wasn't any big protest or anything. He just kind of went to look around. He knew the sidewalk counselor, and she was talking to a woman who was going to get an abortion because she was homeless. And so my dad called my mom and he said, do you think it would be okay if we let her live with us for a while? And my mom said, well, if you think it's okay, I think it's okay. And so they put my 4 siblings and I into, you know, another room, and they had an extra room for her, and she lived with us for the last few months of her pregnancy and the first few months after that. She finished some kind of, I mean, my memory is a little fuzzy because I was pretty young, but she finished some kind of apprenticeship at the same time.
Wow.
And just got on her feet, and her daughter is now, you know, approximately 9 years younger than me.
Yeah.
And that was not the only time my parents did something pro-life, but it was a big one. And I just thought, well, this is what people do.
Yeah.
It's very serious. This is a serious thing, and you need to help.
Yeah.
And so that was foundational to me. So I've always been pro-life. I left the Catholic faith. I mean, there's not like a single moment, but I started to leave the faith probably in late high school. My deconversion was a slow, years-long process.
Okay.
And as my views on that changed, on religion, my views on quite a few other issues also changed, in particular issues having to do with gender and just other stuff. But my views on abortion didn't change at all. Not even a little bit, because it's killing human beings. You don't need to be religious to see that that's happening. And so I've always been pro-life. The question is more how to find a place for that. You know, where's your tribe? You know,
absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. That's good. That's good. I'm glad you've been able to find that. I'm glad your parents, I'm going to say, set the example for what pro-life looks like. And because honestly, I think that's something that we miss in our generation today. It's one thing to say you're pro-life, but it's another thing to really live out your pro-life values. And so
do something about it. Yeah,
absolutely. And so whether you're, you know, religious background or not, you know, it's, you have to live out those values if they're really your values. So
I want to make
your parents had that.
One other quick note about that.
Yeah.
That example story I just gave, I believe that you should also do that if you're pro-choice. Because that woman was not seeking an abortion because she really wanted an abortion. She was seeking an abortion because she felt like she didn't have a choice.
Absolutely.
And if we're trying to, whether you're trying to protect prenatal children or you're trying to support women's autonomy, in that example, the solution should have been the same, which is she just needed more help. And I just want to say that I think there's a lot of room for common ground.
Oh, absolutely. I would totally agree. And we'll probably get into that a little bit more. But I think that's one of the things that the pro-life community is often accused of, that we're only concerned about the baby. And, you know, that's something that we have to fix. Something we have to fix. So you talked a little bit about secular pro-life. For the listeners who are not necessarily familiar with that, Why do you think it's important to create an explicitly secular organization within the board of the pro-life movement?
Oh, I think it's enormous because, in short, because we want literally everyone to be pro-life.
Yeah.
And therefore, we need to be able to make our case in framings and contexts that they can understand. Mm-hmm. And so not everyone is religious. Even people mm-hmm. who are religious aren't all Christian. Even Christians aren't always on the same page about whether their pro-life views are a private religious belief or a public human rights issue.
Yeah.
So there's tons of room mm-hmm. There's tons of need to mm-hmm. be able to talk about this with framings that people can access. Mm-hmm. And I think that I want to be clear, secular pro-life is not anti-religious.
Right.
And we think there are important contexts where you should talk about how your faith informs your views, especially if you mm-hmm. share that faith with the person you're talking to. That's completely, it's not just reasonable, it's a good idea.
Right.
But we just want people to have multiple tools in their toolbox because we want to get everyone to be on the same page on the abortion issue, even if they completely disagree on God or other topics.
Life Matters is the program where we engage life issues with critical thinking and a biblical worldview, and it is a ministry of Assure Women's Center. God has been faithful to Assure Women's Center for over 40 years, and the story continues. Join us in Omaha on April 2nd, 2026 for Assure's 40th birthday banquet, featuring Tim Tebow as keynote speaker and Rich Bott as our MC. This will be one of the largest pro-life banquets in the country. We hope you'll join us as we remember yesterday and look ahead to how God will transform Assure's future. Learn more at firststeptolife.com.
You're listening to Life Matters. I'm Toni Clark, and today I'm talking with Monica Snyder. Monica is Executive Director of Secular Pro-Life. We've been discussing how understanding secular arguments against abortion can equip Christians to have more effective conversations about life, especially with those who don't share a Christian worldview. Let's continue our conversation. So your mission includes advancing secular arguments against abortion while intentionally avoiding religious debate.
Yes.
Why is it important that that boundary exists for your work, and how effective is it?
It's very important because Secular Pro-Life is a single issue organization. Okay. Even though the leadership and a lot of the volunteers are privately what you would call consistent life, not all of them are. And also, we're trying to build as broad of a coalition as possible. So we very intentionally designed our group to be single issue. We welcome help fighting abortion from people who feel all kinds of things about immigration and guns and LGBT and, you know, just name it. And that includes religion. So we are not atheist pro-life. We're not here to advocate for atheism. I'm not trying to convince anyone to not believe in God. I actually don't really care very much. I am here to convince people to be against abortion. And because we're so prominent about our secularism, inevitably a certain amount of people will want to fight about that. And so we just made it a policy. Like, we're not interested in that. If you want to talk about that privately with me over coffee as friends sometime, sure. But when I'm tabling at a conference or, you know, speaking at an event or representing us, I have people come up to me that want to debate religion. And I will just say, I'm not interested in that. If you think that I'm wrong about atheism, I am completely comfortable with you thinking that. I don't care.
Yeah.
Are you going to help me fight, you know, this abortion amendment?
Yeah, right.
Focus absolutely. Up.
Yeah, absolutely. I love that, especially because, you know, well, our organization is religious, but sometimes I have conversations and it becomes a political issue. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, it's not about politics either. You know, it's about life. And so I love the fact that you're able to articulate, you know, being pro-life and not including, you know, I actually heard someone say that you can't be pro-life if you're not a Christian. And I don't know.
Watch me.
I agree. I'm like, when I heard that, I was like, okay. So I like the fact that you all are, it's a single issue. You're a single issue organization. I love that because it brings attention to what we're talking about, life. Mm-hmm. So I applaud you guys for that.
Thank you.
So from your experience, what assumptions do people often make about pro-lifers and secular pro-life challenges just by existing? I think we just
so the biggest one is believing that the only reasons to oppose abortion are religious.
Yeah.
Just saying I'm an atheist and pro-life is enough to give a lot of people pause.
Yeah.
Now, some will still push back and they'll say, well, you can't do that. You can't be. It doesn't make sense. And then you can have a broader conversation. But for some people, just saying it is just enough to get them. What we're looking for here is not I'm going to convince you in a single conversation to completely change your worldview on abortion. I mean, sure, if you want to. But all I really want is you to go, huh, that's all I want.
Yeah.
That's what I need to think about it. And so so that's the big one. But I will say, too, so we have a 3-part mission. And the second part now says that we are trying to create space for what we call non-traditional pro-lifers. And that is basically people who deviate, people who are already morally opposed to abortion, but who are not necessarily Christian or very politically conservative. It could be either one.
Okay.
That's actually an updated version of our mission. Years ago, it used to just say making space for secular pro-lifers, atheists, agnostics, and non-religious. Now, secular pro-lifers are a type of non-traditional pro-lifer, but we expanded it because even though our focus is on secular arguments, we have really come to see that all the non-traditional pro-lifers, I mean, Democrats, progressives, LGBT, anything that deviates from the stereotype, anything that you would assume their demographic is pro-choice, but they're pro-life, these are crucial ambassadors to the larger culture that the broader pro-life movement struggles to talk to. And they tend to be crucial ambassadors who are often very socially alienated and exhausted. And so it's actually so important to give them space and say, I see you, love what you're doing, here to support you. Because first of all, we want people to not feel sad and lonely, but also because we want them to have the emotional energy to go into their organic social circles that are not talking to the pro-life movement at all and be able to say in the context of their priorities, you know, a progressive vegan atheist pro-lifer in New York is going to explain her perspective differently than, you know, a hardcore Catholic pro-lifer out in the suburbs of St. Louis. And we think it's really important to get back to your question. Just by existing, we challenge the notion that this is only a religious issue. But there are other ways in our work that we also try to challenge the notion, like you just said, that it's only a political issue or that it's an only an anything issue.
Yeah.
We want people to know you do not have to register Republican or convert to Catholicism to have a problem with killing babies in the womb.
Absolutely.
You could stay right where you are. Stay right where you are and also say, hey, I'm not really super into this. Let's talk about it more.
Absolutely. That's good. That's good. So many of our listeners are Christians who care deeply about life, but they struggle to know how to talk about abortion with non-Christians. Why do you think secular arguments are so important to them to understand and use?
Yeah, because the arguments aren't so much about who is making them, but who is hearing them.
Yeah.
And so if, like I said before, if you're talking to someone, especially someone you know from your own church, but even someone that you know shares your faith, that makes sense. You can talk about it in that way.
Mm-hmm.
But in many cases, that's not who you're talking to, or you don't know yet the details of who you're talking to. So you start very broad and you can always narrow it more to that person as you get to know them. So the most basic thing is to talk about it as a human rights issue.
Yeah.
Abortion is killing human beings.
Yeah.
It's a human rights violation. So if you're a human, I think you should oppose it. Now, when you say all that, that's still very controversial. People might say it's not killing. Mm-hmm. It's not a human. It's not. That's okay, though, because it's like your first pass test case and their response starts to give you more information about where they're coming from.
Yeah.
You want to be very curious. You want to not defensive, not trying to make them see your view. Very curious. Tell me more. Why do you think that? Why do you think that? And get a sense of where they're at, you know, but you start it from a place that's very broad. And then figure out who you're talking to.
Right, right.
Yeah.
That's good. I like the, you said it earlier as well, just there's, you can always find common ground. Mm-hmm. And if you keep the main thing, you can find common ground. And you're right. I mean, even in my work here at Assure, I'm going to talk about my work differently than I would at church for someone that we had share the same values than someone. But that's, I mean, across the board in anything, it's not necessarily just life. Yeah. It could be drinking. It could be whatever. If we have a relationship and I know, you know, we're aligned, we can have a conversation on that all day. But someone that views differently from me, I'm going to figure out how we can have this conversation and not yell at each other and have a reasonable conversation.
We have a handout on our website that's titled How to Talk and Not Fight About Abortion.
I love it. I love it.
Yeah,
I love it. So one of your initiatives is called Building Bridges. What inspired that project and who was the primary audience you had in mind when developing it?
So that project was on request. Nellie Roach of Choose Life Marketing at that time contacted me and said, hey, I see what kind of work you guys are doing. We train pregnancy resource centers. We would love to get some thoughts about specifically how what are usually, you know, faithful Christian people can best communicate with the women coming through their doors who are from a whole variety of backgrounds. And I'll tell you, when she first asked me, I had a little bit of imposter syndrome because I am fine telling you how I think it works to talk to secular people in general, but I don't have any experience specifically talking to abortion-minded women in that moment. So I don't want to come in and tell you your job.
Right.
So we did a lot of, my team did a lot of research. We know what our background is in, but we interviewed executive directors of pregnancy resource centers. We interviewed experts in post-abortion healing. And we just said, what are your main themes that you found successful? And then we wove that together with our experiences from a secular perspective. And the original target audience was very specifically Christian pregnancy resource center leadership and staff. That was very specific for the initial version of Building Bridges. Since then, I'm delighted to report, we have expanded it a lot. We have given the presentation to pregnancy resource center people more than once, but we've also given it for talking about reaching just moderate pro-choice people in kind of your interpersonal life. We also have a whole section about welcoming in and empowering what we call the non-traditional pro-lifers. Each one of these is a kind of bridge that we think is important to pro-life work. And a lot of them have very similar themes. Really, it just comes back to seeing the individual person in front of you, listening, and finding common ground. Those are like the biggest takeaways. That could apply to almost anything. But we do get more specific than that, depending on which audience we're talking about.
Gotcha. And I believe when I heard you at the Samaritan Summit, which Nellie and Jennifer actually worked together for that conference, that, I believe that's the platform from what you were talking.
That was the inaugural one.
Yeah. Yeah. And it was, I mean, you know, I'm sure you ruffled some feathers because you're very open about not being religious.
Sure.
But I mean, me and my staff thought, wow, this is a great way to think of things outside of our perspective, because everyone we come in contact with won't have the same perspective as we do. And so I think it kind of forces you to, you know, well, I won't preach, but, you know, Jesus dealt with people that didn't think and look and act like he did. And he was still able to have a conversation with them.
It's actually the whole point. If you're only talking to the people who already think and look and act like you do, what are we even doing here? They already agree.
Yes. So absolutely. Absolutely. What are some common mistakes well-meaning pro-lifers make when talking with abortion vulnerable women, and how does your approach differ?
It depends on the context, but I think secular pro-life mostly exists online. We mostly do online content. Okay. So when I see well-meaning pro-lifers talking to potential abortion-minded women, it's online. And that's a very, very different context than someone walking in person and talking to you at a PRC.
Okay.
But either way, I think you can speak actually pretty broadly that in general, when team A of any stripe in almost any topic is trying to be persuasive to team B, the common mistakes are to talk more than listen, to prioritize the point you want to get across, to not pause and figure out where team B is coming from. And I, by the way, everything I'm about to say to you, I have made all these mistakes 80 million times. Okay. This is just human nature, but talking more than listening. It's much more effective to be relational and to build trust, show them you're interested in where they're coming from. In particular, online, we tend to focus on the logic, the citations, the best philosophical arguments, the biological facts, and these all matter. But when you're talking about being persuasive to an individual, specific person you're talking to, the relationship matters more because that's human nature. And so finding ways to communicate that are respectful, not people pleasing, that invites aggression, but just professional, respectful, reasonable, that's huge. Finding ways to emphasize common ground, that's huge. The more people feel that you are similar, the more they're willing to consider what you're saying. I would say the biggest mistakes are talking more than listening, hurrying to respond without sitting and kind of thinking about what you want to say. This is online. In person, obviously, you can't just sit there and stare at them, but like, and just prioritizing your central message more than figuring out where they're coming from.
Yeah.
That's the mistake. And then certainly, of course, to me, these are so egregious, they're barely worth mentioning, but responding with condemnation, aggression, sarcasm, passive aggression, name calling, condescension. These are all such ridiculous rookie mistakes that I'm annoyed to even mention them, but don't do that. Because know that if you are talking about abortion online, whether it's with an abortion vulnerable woman or anyone else,
yeah,
I consider you an ambassador for my team.
Mm.
And therefore, I expect you to conduct yourself in a way that recommends us. And when you don't, yeah, I'm more mad at you than I am at pro-choicers, okay? Because
yeah,
if pro-choice people want to be condescending, rude, passive-aggressive, they're just pushing people more towards me. That's fine.
Oh, right.
But my team does it, you're yeah, embarrassing me. Please stop.
Yeah. I love the fact that, you know, you talk about the team. We are on the same team. I think sometimes it's hard for people to, when you have a very limited perspective, it's hard to see that there are other teammates that
sure,
hold a different position. You think about a basketball team. We're a team, you know, you got forward, you got center, you got guards. We're on the same team. We just play.
And how incompetent would the team be if it was only centers and nobody else?
Well, when I was playing, we wouldn't score many points because we couldn't get the ball up the court. But anyway. Right.
Please join us next week for part two of our interview with Monica Snyder. Life Matters is an educational outreach resource of Assure Women's Center in Omaha, Nebraska. To learn more about the Ministry of Assure, visit firststeptolife.com. That's firststeptolife.com. There you can learn about the many services we provide, including how we come alongside abortion-minded mothers and empower women to choose life for her and her baby, as well as find our most current broadcasts and all of our past episodes. God has been faithful to Assure Women's Center for over 40 years, and the story continues. Join us in Omaha on April 2nd, 2026 for Assure's 40th birthday banquet, featuring Tim Tebow as keynote speaker and Rich Vaught as our MC. This will be one of the largest pro-life banquets in the country. We hope you'll join us as we remember yesterday and look ahead to how God will transform Assure's future. Learn more at firststeptolife.com. Thanks for listening to Life Matters. Join us again next week at the same time right here on Bot Radio Network.